Our reading this morning was written by Lucy Maud Montgomery on the occasion of a visit to the Church of the Redeemer, the Universalist Church in Halifax in 1901. And she writes, I have just received a check for $25 from the delineator for a story. Watch me smile. Another week has come to an end. Tomorrow is Sunday. Glory be. I have been indulging in a sort of religious dissipation ever since coming to Halifax. That is, I've been making the rounds of all the churches. Last Sunday evening, I went up to the north end to the Universalist Church. I found it quite interesting, but certainly would not care for it as a steady thing. It is much like a lecture and a concert combined. The pastor gave a very logical and painfully truthful talk on what do men really believe concerning immortality. The music was charming, and I enjoyed the whole service, but couldn't exactly see where the religion came in. I couldn't help smiling as I imagined what some of the dear Orthodox bodies in Cavendish would think of the whole performance. To be sure, they wouldn't understand half of it, and the other half would probably fill them with horror. The service was very simple. I was at the other extreme the Sunday I went to St. Luke's. It is very high, and religious observance there is some positive mummery without pith or meaning. The kernel of Christianity is so shrouded in the husks of ritual that it is almost lost altogether.
Okay, this morning's theme is, or this month's theme has been identity and story. And so today I'm addressing the question, what is our identity? Should we continue to call ourselves a church? I'm an engineer by training, and so I was taught a particular procedure when I'm dealing with decision making. I have to make a decision. And the first step of that procedure is to be clear about what it is you're trying to achieve. What are your objectives? So as we consider whether we call ourselves a church or not, and right now this is just an academic debate. The board isn't about to change the name of the organization, but it's something we're considering, and you'll hear why during the service. But as I was thinking about it, what would be the objectives if you were considering such a change? Well, in general, we're looking to attract more people by better conveying who we are, and maybe even more importantly, who we are becoming. Conveying our mission to all ages, and in the process to be more relevant in our community. There's a very practical thing that has to be considered in here, is preserving our charitable status. I'll talk a little bit about that. The third thing, and then this is kind of a business way of looking at it, again, I realize, but it's to build our brand, preserving a sense of history and continuity. And then to be easy to find when someone's searching for a spiritual home. If you're looking for a church, and we aren't a church, are you going to find us? And then lastly, to make everyone who attends our services feel welcome and proud to be here. So the first thing to consider is conveying who we are. What does that word church mean today? What experiences and emotions does it connect with, that word church? So I found a definition on YouTube.
Church.
Started.
A Christian house of worship, a building where religious services take place. Christians collectively seen as a single spiritual community, Christianity. A local group of people who follow the same Christian religious beliefs, local or general. Church synonyms, chapel, kirk, congregation. C-H-U-R-C-H. Church. A Christian house of worship, a building where religious services take place.
Okay, you get the point. You can argue with that definition of church. But that's a pretty, I think what most people would say a church is. It is a Christian house of worship. And the question I'm asking today is that who we still are. Ask someone under 35 how they feel about going to church or being invited to go to church. I've done that a number of times, and you often get a little bit of a startled response and a little bit of certain concern about what you're being invited to participate in and whether you really want to do that or not. The concern is that the word church has become a stumbling block for many people because of that definition, because it's so ingrained in us to what a church is and what we should expect at a church. We've been around for 180 years. I would say I'm not particularly proud that we've been a church for 180 years. I'm proud that we've been Unitarian. I'm proud that we've been Universalist. Well, we've been Universalist for 180 years. We've been Unitarian since 1961. But when we consider the use of the word church, I think we should put extra weight on how that word is interpreted by our younger people in the community, because they're our future. And I think that our name now conveys a lot about who we were, but nothing really about what we're aspiring to become. We are UU. I like to say that Unitarians believe that if there is a God, there is only one God. And Universalists believe in a God of love, based on the premise that if there's a heaven, we're all going there. And I think those messages are still very current, very relevant. Rabbi Howard Voss has written, "I think the biggest change in the next 20 years will be the result of the way young people relate to organized religion. Young people are skeptical of joining or participating in institutions, preferring to network or socialize in virtual groups or more informal settings. The institution of organized religion will continue to appear as outdated, bloated remnant of the past. That we do not represent the way our youth look at the world." Second thing, my point that we need to take into consideration when we're making a decision is our charitable status. And because of being audited by the CRA recently, the Canadian Unitarian Council spent $45,000 or so working to preserve our charitable status. And I learned a lot in the process. And I don't claim to be an expert, and I know there are differing opinions, but we hired a firm, Terence Carter Professional Corporation, who are the best-known consultants in this field of charitable law. And they point out that there are four things that law justifies charitable exemptions for. Trust for the relief of the poor. If you can demonstrate that what your purpose of existence is to relieve the suffering of the poor, that's a valid charitable cause. Trust for the advancement of education. If you have an educational issue, you can form a foundation and become a charitable trust. Trust for the advancement of religion. And then there's another catch-all category, trust for other purposes beneficial to the community, not falling under any of the preceding heads. So we clearly got our charitable status as a trust for the advancement of religion. But then that raises questions. What is a religion? Terence Carter, who wrote the following. Even though it's most often religion that teaches us how to be ethical, the courts have drawn a distinction between religion and ethics for the purposes of determining where the boundaries of the advancement of religion lie. As stated, and then he quotes from a particular legal case, religion is concerned with man's relationship with God, and ethics are concerned with man's relations with man. And pardon me for the male slant there, but that's what it was written. Despite the fact that the ethical teachings of religion are part of what makes religion for the public benefit, the courts have held that in order for the advancement of religion, and this is Terence Carter writing this very recently, the courts have held that in order for the advancement of religion to qualify as a charitable purpose, two essential elements are necessary, faith in God and worship of that God. In addition, in order for prospective charity to qualify under advancement of religion, the court must be able to ascertain that the organization in question is in fact advancing a bona fide religion. And how is that organization advanced, and how that organization advances that religion? It follows that in order to qualify for advancing religion, an organization generally must pursue a religious purpose that promotes faith in God and worship of that God. And here ends the quote. Well, that shouldn't scare you too much. The underlying premise here is that you need the broadest definition possible of the two words God and worship. And I think we embrace both of those here in our own way. So the next thing I said we needed to consider was to build on the brand, preserving our sense of history and continuity. We have an amazing brand. Our brand in Halifax goes back to 1837. That's why the words since 1837 are printed on the back of those yellow t-shirts that we've got. It's a way of expressing our credentials in the community. We have a brand that promotes God as love. And that message is eternal. We have a brand that promotes the importance of good works, and always have. We've been leaders in anti-slavery and women's rights and LGBTQ rights. Now, in truth and reconciliation with the Indigenous peoples of Canada, we have principles and sources that act as guides for us that are a powerful part of our brand. On the other hand, I think that one of the weaknesses of Unitarian Universalism is the great variety among our congregations in an interconnected world. This is the outcome of our congregational polity, that every congregation is free to set its own path, to follow its own direction. There was an address at the 2016 annual meeting, or maybe it was 2015, where a younger person got up and spoke about investigating Unitarian Universalism and wanting to participate and finding all kinds of different messages from different places and attending different congregations and finding different ways of doing things, and just wasn't very convenient for her. That generation is so used to franchises. When you go to a McDonald's, you know what's going to happen at McDonald's. When you go to Burger King, you know what's going to happen at Burger King. And I'm not saying we should be a McDonald's or a Burger King, but we do have very different messages from our different congregations. Imagine if there was, because we have congregations, we have churches, we have societies, we have fellowships, and I'm sure there are other names out there. The one in St. Catharines that I belong to was the Church of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. They wanted to cover all the bases. But imagine if McDonald's restaurants were really, some were McDonald's stores, and some were McDonald's grocery stores, and some were McDonald's markets, and some were McDonald's vegan shops. You'd have a little more confusion about attending, going to a McDonald's. One idea that kind of appeals to me is that if every city in the country had a Unitarian Universalist center, And each center had some very common ways about the way they presented themselves, presented their brand. Well, that may be controversial. That may be too businesslike. Second thing is, another point I wanted to make is that we should be easy to find. And late last night, when I was working on this, I went to do a little search for a church online. Somebody younger than me needs to tell me if Yelp is still a current leader in the field of getting information on organizations and so on. Yelp is online if you want to check out a restaurant or a shoe shop or whatever. People will write in their reviews for it. Anyway, I went to Yelp to see what I could find out about our church. We're not listed as a church on Yelp. Surprising, I couldn't find us anywhere. We're listed in another section on Yelp under religious organizations, which is kind of interesting. What makes me think Yelp may not be as relevant as I thought it was is even the highest rated organizations, churches here, had like four reviews. Three reviews, one review. So I did a really excellent review last night for our church. And I thought we'd move up in the rankings. So if any of you want to go home today and do a favorable review, please, on the Universalist Unitarian Church of Halifax, you can find us under religious organizations. But the point is, if we drop the word church, people that are looking for a spiritual home, that may be the first place they look. They may not really, maybe a younger person who really doesn't want to go to a church, but they'll start there and see where that takes them. And then the last point I wanted to make is that our name should make everyone who attends here welcome. If you're Jewish or Hindu or Muslim by background or indigenous, and you tell your friends that you attend a church, the assumption is immediately that you've converted to Christianity. Sripad would allow me to say this because he's told me this several times, that as a Hindu, he didn't tell his community that he was attending the Unitarian Universalist Church for a long time, just because of that fear, that they would immediately think, oh, become a Christian. And he didn't have to become a Christian to attend this congregation, clearly. So, those are the things to consider as we go forward, that I can think of, to consider as we go forward, thinking about whether we maintain the word church in our name or not. I really feel that it's important what goes on here. We have a minister, and again, I don't think you would mind me saying so, that comes and attends fairly regularly when he's in town. He lives in Yarmouth, retired United Church minister. And he told me after a service, he said, I love what you do here. I really love it. And I want to come back and I want to be considered a part of the group. But he said, what you do here isn't church. What you have here is a community, a beloved community. But he didn't consider it a church. So I'll close by repeating by reading some words by Dr. Gordon McKeeman. It's about ministry, but that's ultimately what goes on here, is ministry. The ministry beckons forth hidden possibilities, inviting people into deeper, more constant, more reverent relationship with the world and with one another, carrying forward a long heritage of hope and liberation that has dignified and informed the human venture over many centuries. Being present with, to, and for others, in their terrors and in their torments, in their grief, in their misery, in their pain, knowing that those feelings are our feelings too. Celebrating the triumphs of the human spirit, the miracle of birth and life, and the wonder of devotion and sacrifice. Witnessing to life-enhancing values, speaking truth to power, speaking for human dignity and equality, for compassion and aspiration. leading in life in the presence of death, struggling for human responsibility against the principalities and structures that ignore humanness and become instruments of death. It's all these and much more than all of them, present in wordless, the unspoken, the ineffable. Ministry is speaking and living to the highest we know and living with the knowledge that it is never as deep and as wide and as high as we wish. Whenever there is a meeting that summons us to our better selves, wherever our lostness is found, our fragments are united, our wounds begin healing, our spines begin to stiffen, and our muscles grow strong for the task ahead. May it be so. Amen.